It's probably working. It's probably working. Okay, then we can start. Today's exercise is about anomaly detection systems using machine learning. We are actually going to do some examples on machine learning where the application is the data that we call, for example, CPU consumption, memory consumption, network consumption, but it can be considered as several numerical inputs, which are abstractions of some other values that are measured. So this is of general use, not only in intrusion detection. So the first thing that we are going to do is the lab exercise, where we are going to consider an example where we use a deep neural network that we define by ourselves to classify the data that are more or less generated at random with some ideas in mind, not completely random because maybe I have said that. If not, I'm saying now a random data cannot be used for training. So you cannot train any machine learning system on random data. This cannot be done. Okay. So you download this file from Blackboard. Then you open and extract these files, training data and testing data. These are comma-separated values, so you can open them in normal text editor or in Excel or in whatever. And we have a Python program, dnn1.py, that we actually use to read this data and train a classifier that we define by ourselves, a deep neural network in general, and test with testing data. That's what we are going to demonstrate. So what I'm going to use is the environment called PyCharm, which is freely available online. It's JetBrains. And you can download and install PyCharm, or you can use any other Python interpreter. So this one is something that I usually use for other things, so we can use it for this as well. Now, yesterday I have announced that we were going to use this Keras system, which is a layer above the TensorFlow system by Google. So from this Keras, in this program, we are going to import models, but these models, this name is not models in the artificial intelligence sense. They are actually the models of neural networks. And then from the same system, we import layers. You know that neural networks are organized in layers. So everything in Keras is centered around layers. So we define the neural network layer by layer as well. And of course, we are going to use this numerical library for Python, which has nothing to do with artificial intelligence. It's just for reading data, etc., in our case. Now, the training data is a text file, comma-separated values. So I can show you how this looks like. We have 1,000 triples of CPU usage, memory usage, network usage, and the label. So 1 is considered abnormal, 0 is considered normal. So we have 1,000 such for training. The training data set is big, and the testing data set is, in our case, small. It's 100 vectors to test. But it has the same structure, so I can open that one as well. So we have testing data. Now, since these are testing data, they are also labeled. Of course, this label is not given to the classifier. It only serves to evaluate the classifier, to evaluate the quality of classification, because then we look at where, for example, this vector was classified, whether it was classified in the class 1 or in the class 0. If it was classified in class 1, that's good. If not, then that's misclassification, so it is error. Okay, so we have triples that are to be read, and we do that here. First, we read the train data, and then we read the test data. Once we read the train data, we separate the triples from the labels, because this is required by the functions of Keras. So we do that, and we call the corresponding arrays train data and train labels. And of course, we have to convert the train labels to integer, which is done with this command. The same we do with the test data. So we have test data, which are triples, CPU time, memory usage, and network usage, and the test labels that are separated. This minus one means the last column of the data. So those that are not familiar with Python, the Python arrays can be sliced, which is a very nice thing. This colon 100 means all the vectors from index 0 to index 99. And here, colon 3 means the first three columns, 0, 1, and 2. And here, minus 1, it's actually the column 4, which is the label. So the last one. So that's called slicing. Now, these are commented here, which means they are not actual. And these are meant to use for, so to say, cheating. Because if you say that the test data is the same as the train data, as we do here, then we provide the same data for testing as we did for training. So we never do that in practice, of course. But this, if we do that, we expect extremely high accuracy. That should be the case. Of course, you can play with that at home just to illustrate how good or bad this is. But of course, this is never done in practice. So once we have read the data, we have now for the training data, we have the training triples and the corresponding labels in two separate arrays, and the same for the test data. But this is just reading the data. We haven't arrived to design of the neural networks yet. This is what we are going to do now. So we define a network. You see, first you choose the model. Model sequential means that we use the feed-forward neural network. So in all our examples, we are going to use this sequential, which means feed-forward neural network, the one that we used in class on machine learning in intrusion detection. Now, we add layers one by one. Okay? Now, the first time we add layer, we actually add two layers. You see, this input shape 3 means, if you remember yesterday, we said that if you have three components of the input vector, then you need three neurons in the first layer. That's this. So the first layer is actually this, and this here is the second layer. Now, the second layer, by this command, it has 32 neurons, and its activation function is L. Of course, for the first layer, we don't need any activation function. It just forwards the data, the components of the input vector, to the next layer. So that's its role. So then we add another one, also with 32 neurons in the layer, and the same activation function, ReLU. Now, what does it mean, dense? Dense means that all the layers from one all the neurons from one layer are connected to all the layers in the next layer. That's what they mean in Keras by dense. There are other possibilities, of course. We saw that yesterday with Jacinto Rolli's system, where they tried other types of neural network, not just dense. But for this simple example, we keep all the connections. Okay? And then finally, the final layer, since we have two classes, normal and abnormal. The last layer only contains one neuron, only one neuron, and its activation function is sigmoid, not ReLU. So that's recommended. So we actually defined our network, so to say, by the book. So how it should be. So the ReLU activation function is used in all the layers except the last one, where we use the sigmoid activation function. Now this is the definition. To really get the network, we use this compile method. Okay? Compile, where we define the optimizer. Our optimizer will be RMSProp, can be something else. We have discussed that before. The loss function is binary cross entropy, also by the book. It is recommended for our case. And the metric is what we want to know from testing. So in our case, we need to know accuracy. So how many vectors have been correctly classified. That's accuracy. In fact, this will be a piece of data with two components. One will be the accuracy, the first one will be loss, and the second one will be accuracy. So you will see that when we run the program. Now, the fit method, once we create the network, the fit method actually trains. So the fit method trains the neural network that we have defined with train data and train labels, how many epochs, which means how many times we browse through the whole data set for training. And you see, we do that by batches, not all the 1,000 vectors at once. We do it 100 at a time. That's what is also by the book recommended. Finally, we test by this method evaluate, where we have the test data. Only the test data are given to the classifier, but the test labels are also needed here for evaluation, because the classifier will classify our 100 vectors, but not all of them will be correctly classified. To see how many of them were correctly classified, we compare with the test labels. And also we test with batch size 100 at a time. So we do not classify all at once. And of course, we print this score. Score is, as I said, two values. The first value is the value of the loss in binary cross entropy. And the second one is the value of accuracy. Now, this is the complete definition of our deep learning neural network. Now, what we are going to do, we are going to start with more neurons in each layer. We start with 128. I'll let you know why. So we start with 128 neurons in each layer. So the rest we do not change. Well, we can change the number of epochs. 10 is really a small number. So we say at least 100. This will not be a problem for our program. Now we can run the program. Now here when you run, you will get a lot of messages in red. Why is that? Because we don't have a GPU for TensorFlow, but we can run just on CPU. So you just ignore all these messages, because if you go into the beginning, you will see why it is warning. So warning is CUDA, you see? So CUDA is for graphics. And then TensorFlow, ignore above CUDA, etc. if you do not have a GPU set up on your machine. If you do and you wanted to use GPU, then you should correct something, but here no, because we don't. It's all related to this. So just don't care about this. So now, what is printed when you run the program? You see, only the 10th batch is printed, the result for the 10th. It will be 10 batches because we have 1,000 training samples and a batch of the size 100, which means we shall have 10 batches in each epoch. Now, for the 10th batch, we get the loss function 0.67, accuracy 0.52, which is terrible. It's bad, bad, bad. So bad, bad, etc., etc. But after all these epochs, so the epoch number 100, what we get is 71% of accuracy, which is not that bad for so small number of epochs. Now, the last one here, the last line, well, next to last, the last one is repeated this, more or less, with more decimals. Okay? So this is testing. So this is the network.evaluate. Here, so far, it was network.fit. Now, network.evaluate will give you the loss function and the accuracy, that is 73%, which is not bad. Now, what we have to do is to compare the accuracy that we get with testing with the accuracy that we get in training. Ideally, in training, of course, the accuracy should be 100%. However, you need a lot of epochs to achieve that. We are going to show that we can increase, actually, the accuracy. Okay, so this sounds like good, because in theory, testing has nothing to do with training data, which means they are independent, which means that the testing data have been at least as correctly classified as the training data that has been, this accuracy in training that has been achieved. So this should be approximately of the same. So 70 and something percent, it's not bad. Now, this is the result of this print function in the end of our program, so it's actually the same. Loss is the first piece of data, and accuracy is the second piece of data. It's just the wild number of decimals that you use here, and in this Keras, they actually use only 4 decimals. So there is some rounding here. Now, we are satisfied with how testing behaves. However, we are not satisfied so much with the accuracy. We would like to have better accuracy. To this end, we can do many things. We can increase the number of neurons. We can increase the number of epochs. So if we increase the number of epochs, say to some big number, say 10,000, okay? Now, this will take some time. However, it should give better results for training, okay? So, as we said, ignore these warnings and wait a bit. It's not that slow, actually, but still we have 10,000 epochs. Now we are at 1,000, more or less. So just wait. But now you see the accuracy is 78. It should be better, even more. You will see that after 10,000 it should be better. Now it's 80% already, so it's getting better. One remark, if you run again the same program, then you may get different results because the initialization of weights in the network is random. And for the time being, I'm not sure how we can force Keras to initialize to the same value. Maybe it's not possible, but we could do that in TensorFlow. So low-level instructions. See, we have already reached 90% after 5,000 epochs, so it's not bad. But it's still training procedure. Ideally, after training, if the training procedure converges, it should be 1. But 90% is almost good. Okay, we are approaching the final 1,000 epochs. That's it. Now, you see, this one, Of course, it's the 10th batch in each epoch that is printed by default. You can, of course, configure that, what is printed in Keras. This is from Keras. Now, what we achieve is loss 0.1, which is much better than... So the smaller, the better. And accuracy, the higher, the better, of course. So we achieve 97% accuracy, which is very good in training. However, you see this. The accuracy at testing is still bad, actually, it's 0.7. Now, the question is, why is that? Anybody knows? Maybe you are familiar with machine learning from before. So if you have forgotten, this is called overfitting, which means that our network actually very well fits to the training data, but that the fact that it doesn't classify so well the testing data means that we have trained it too well to this training part, which means that we should be reduce the number of epochs, and or we should reduce the number of neurons in each layer in our case. So this will definitely, what we need is to achieve high values here and more or less the same high value here for testing. Then we can say that our network is well trained. Now this is a typical, so it can be overfitting and underfitting. If we have too few epochs, then it may happen that this number is low and this is higher. This may happen as well. So let's call underfitting. But overfitting is usually a problem because we can run as many epochs as we like, as we have time and resources. So we usually allow this time, and the number of epochs is relatively high. So this has to be corrected. So our classifier is overfit. Okay? Now, we can reduce, for example, to 5,000. That's one possibility. So let's first reduce the number of epochs to 5,000 and rerun. Let's see what will happen. Now it's faster because we have fewer epochs, so it will take less time. Let's see what we get. So by this, we can expect that the difference between the accuracy at training that is achieved and the testing is smaller than in the previous case. So it may be less overfit. So let's see what... This is not guaranteed, however, because we rerun and we get different results. Okay, almost done. So what you get here is 90 and 71, so almost no gain. Actually, the quality of training was reduced because we didn't get 97% as previously. We get 90, but the accuracy at testing is the same as before. So it was reduced, overfitting, but we would like to reduce it the other way around. We would like to keep the training accuracy and increase the testing accuracy. So we didn't get much here. Let's see if we put 1,000 epochs only, what will happen. You see? We have obtained approximately the same value of training and testing accuracy. However, this accuracy is low. We would like to have more. So what can we do next? What we can do next is to reduce the number of neurons. So we have too many neurons. So let's see if we put 32. You don't have to have the same number of neurons in each layer, but in this case, let's put the same number of neurons, like 32. Okay, so let's see if we put now, let's see first with 10,000 batches how it will behave. Now we have significantly reduced the number of neurons in each layer. So let's see what will be the difference between these two values of accuracy. Now it will, of course, take some time. However, each epoch runs faster because we have smaller number of neurons, so it's less calculations. Of course, while it is calculating, Keras is not the only system where you can practice with neural networks. You can use, for example, MATLAB. It also has a very good system, but for MATLAB, you have to convert all the formulas to vectorial form. It requires some knowledge of mathematics for this. So this one, Keras, is very easy to use and straightforward. Okay, almost done. Aha! Approximately the same values, a bit higher than with 1,000 epochs, but we didn't gain much by, before we had more neurons, I have to admit. So, okay, 78, it could be better. Okay, now we can try with 64, for example. So there is no overfitting here, which is good, but we would like to get higher values here if possible. So it's not very easy to achieve, so you have to experiment. 64, let's say, and see what happens. Now it will be more calculation, the same number of epochs. I think this was the best, if I remember well, this was the best result we have achieved, or with 5,000, I'm not sure. We can try. So what with 10,000 epochs and 64 neurons in, these are hidden layers, that's how they are called. So hidden layers that are neither input nor output layers, they are called hidden layers. Now, by the way, yesterday when I talked about weights of these neural networks, I said that the weights cannot be negative. That I didn't mean that. The inputs in our case, in our example, cannot be negative because they are percentages. But the weights can be negative, so it was just lapsus. So when you listen to the recording, you will see that. I didn't mean that. So the weights, we are going to see that from our examples, they can be negative. Now 7,000, okay, let's see, 84%. It's not that bad, but we are going to see what happens with testing, because we may get to overfitting situation now as well, because with 128 it was too much, and the testing accuracy was not so good. Bad, you see, big overfitting, you see. So it's not a good idea to have both too many epochs and too many neurons in each epoch. Okay, let's reduce that to 5,000. Okay, half of that. Let's see if we get something that is acceptable. So you have to experiment, you see. And besides, we have a small number of layers. Four layers, so now you have networks with many, many, many layers, so we can actually try to increase the number of layers and see what happens. Percent of accuracy, maybe 80, but we shall see what will happen with the accuracy of testing. Mm, there is overfitting, but not that much as before. So, well, you can play with this. We can, for example, add a layer. So we add a layer with 64 neurons. Will that increase overfitting or not? We shall see. So we now have 5 layers, 64 neurons each, except of the first and the last. Now we get better accuracy with more layers. As we said, each layer that we add gives a better representation of input data. So it should be better. Now, what happens with the testing? That's the question. Almost done. Bad, you see, big overfitting. So, you can play with this. Now we can use a shallow network, for example. Let's see a network that is not deep learning. You see, it is. This is the first layer, this with input shape 3. This one is the hidden layer, the only one, and that's the output layer. Now, activation should be sigmoid to give like this. You see? Because that's a shallow network by the book. So sigmoid function is used, etc., etc. And the optimizer should be that's the problem. So then the optimizer should not be this one. It would be but in Keras how it is called, that's the question. If you remember in the lecture, it was gradient descent. Okay, so backpropagation is actually repeating the gradient descent. But in Keras, how this is really called, we should look at the manual. So I'm not quite sure what word to put here. Maybe online we can find something. So, Keras optimizers. Hopefully. So, what can we do? Which ones? See, this is Adam, but do they have... Aha! Available optimizers. No. They don't have what we need for this by the book. Okay, so we keep RMS prop. And try. So this is a shallow network. So what do we get with this? Okay, we keep 64 and 5,000 epochs and see what will happen. As I said, you can now play, vary all these parameters, see what happens. What you don't need is this overfitting. So that's the problem. So this accuracy should be as high as possible, and the accuracy of testing should be as high as possible, but approximately the same as the accuracy of training. And we said that the shallow network can solve any problem. But you will have to train well. See? It's underfit, actually. But not much. So this is acceptable. However, if I repeat the experiment with the same data, same network, it may be different because of the different initial distribution of weights. Now you can, of course, play, vary things. approximately the same. Okay. Now, we have played a bit with this. Now, what can we do here? We return to the previous ReLU. We reduce this to 32, and we retain deep neural network with 32 neurons per layer, and then we get this, and the number of epochs, we can say 1,000. What happens with this? It will probably be less accurate, but it will probably be no overfitting. So let's see with four layers with the cardinality of 32 networks and then neurons per layer. So 74, 75, so it's not bad. So it's 3/4, not that bad. Okay, so that was actually what I wanted to show you, how you can use Keras and easily play with the structure of the network, and then you can train it, you can test it, and see what happens with accuracy and the loss. Of course, here we do more or less neural network engineering. We are not getting deeply into the meaning of all these functions, what is binary, cross-entropy, etc., etc. This is not an AI course. We don't have much time for that. But it illustrates how we can use this system and neural network and deep learning networks also for intrusion detection, because this data we interpret as CPU consumption, memory consumption, and network consumption. It could be something else. It could be more than three things. You can play as you like with this. Okay, so that was our lab. Now we can give a break until 14:00, and then we do the numerical exercise where we train perceptron by hand. You will see how much computation you need, and we only do one single calculation of backpropagation on a network of this type. So you will see that it's really not meant for manual computation at all. So let's have a break. Okay, we can continue now. We are now going to do the numerical exercise. We have several examples here. The first one is very simple, in which you will see actually that the weights can be negative. So we want to design a perceptron in such a way that it detects CPU consumption greater than or equal to 50% on the monitor host, and we have to explain how to do that and demonstrate the work of the design perceptron if we have CPU 40% and 60%. How will this perceptron react? So perceptron is just one neuron. So you will see this. So here the trick is that we add actually, even though we have just one signal, it's the CPU consumption, we actually add a dummy signal of the size of the value 1, and we put the weight to be constant here, minus 0.5, and we don't touch this any longer. So W2 is never changed. If we do that, this perceptron will actually fire at 50%, obviously, because if we compute the total input to this neuron, you will see it is the sum xi wi. So xi is what is given, so this varies. So this x1 can be, in our case, 40% or 60% or whatever percent, and w is 1. So xy1 actually determines this total input because the rest is constant. So we have x1 times 1, which is this, and you have 1 times minus 0.5, that's minus 0.5. So we have the sign of this, x1 minus 0.5, which means if x1 is 40%, 0.4, then the sign will be minus. Minus means normal. Okay, if x1 is 60%, then the sign will be 1, so it will be abnormal. So 60% is bad, 40% is good. And this perceptron actually can do this. So this is a machine that will react whenever X1 overcomes 50%. It would say this is an alarm. So it doesn't like high CPU time. Of course, if you want some other threshold than 0.5, you change this, W2. So you can say 30%, then it will be minus 0.3. Okay? So everything that is smaller than 30 will give negative sign because it's x1 minus the threshold. So you reduce the threshold, so you, for example, if you have 0.2 minus 0.3, it will be minus. So it's normal. If you have 0.4 minus 0.3, that will be plus, that will be abnormal, etc., etc. So you can play with this. So, of course, there is no training here. We trained by heuristic, trained by experience. It's very easy. So that's just to illustrate that we can solve our IDS, say, problems with just one neuron. But that was just one small thing. The next one is how to train a perceptron. So we illustrate that on a sample of 5 labeled vectors. We can say CPU usage, memory usage, something like that, on a host, and the labels given by an expert in advance. So this is our test data set. We have a single 2-input perceptron because the dimension of these vectors is 2. So we provide x1, x2, and then we have w1, w2, the weights of the inputs, and we see how the output gets. So is it 1 or minus 1? Because in perceptron we have the sine function. It is either 1 or minus 1. Okay, so let's do this. Of course, the initial weights have to be given in advance. They are usually random, whatever value. So we started with 0.1 and see how this changes. Now you will see that if you want to do this manually, you have to do many epochs, and this will take a lot of paper if you do it on paper. You will see here like 10 pages of printed computation. So this is really, if you do it by hand, it will be more. And why is that? Because we want the training procedure to converge, which means we want the accuracy of training to be 100%, okay? Which we didn't do in the previous lab, if you remember. So we didn't wait until everything converges. That could take a lot of time, okay? So we do the training with these examples. So we shall use the formulas that we used here as well. So this is the output of the perceptron. It's the sine function of the total input. Very simple. So, well, the initial weights are 0,1 and 0,1. They are all the same. And our first values are x1 is 0,5 and x2 is 0,3. So what is the output with these values? Of course, the label is 1, which means this is bad. Okay? So it should be, if we get 1 here, then we don't have to change these weights because this perceptron actually classifies this vector well. So let's see what happens. So what is total input? It is x1w1 plus x2w2. So we do this calculation here, and this is 0,5 times 0,1 plus 0,3 times 0,1, which is obviously positive. Since it is positive, the sine function is 1. Okay, if the sine function is 1 and the label is 1, then the difference is obviously 0. Okay. And, of course, the deltas will be 0, so we don't have to change the weights for this sample. We take the other one, which is 0,5, 0,4, the same thing. It will be sine 1. So this still works for the first two samples. Then the third one, probably the same, yes. So it will be 1. We still have nice values of these weights. Now, this one will fail. You will see that it will give 0,1 times 0,1 plus 0,3 times 0,1, which is obviously positive, but the label is negative, which means it's always the label minus the obtained output. So that's here, which is minus 2. And then the constant C was 0,1, so it was given in the task. So you need this constant in order to, as we said, to avoid swings in output. And then times the corresponding weight, it was 0,1. So it's minus 0 times 0,2, okay? So if you remember last time when we talked about the perceptron, here is the formula for the output, and here is the formula for the correction. So delta W is the constant times the difference between the label and the obtained output times the value of input. Okay, so in our case, the value of input here, it was 0,1 here and 0,3 here. And if we substitute all this, you get the correction, you see, which is not 0, which means we have to change the weight. So we actually sum the deltas that we get with the previous value. Since the deltas are negative, so it will be actually the difference. No? So the new weights are these. Obviously, that's why we need epochs. Now, before we classified with W1 and W2 equal to 0.1, the first three samples well. Now, will that change if we change the weights? We don't know. So we have to repeat the procedure, but we haven't browsed through all the vectors in the first epoch yet, so there is one remaining, which is this one, 0,2, 0,2, and this is also minus 1, which is normal. So what happens here? Obviously, since both weights are positive, and these are positive, the inputs are positive, so this total input will be positive. Now, the sign of total input is 1, and we have label minus 1, which is, again, giving the correction for both. So see, the expected output minus the the obtained output times the C constant, which is always is the constant, it's always the same, and the inputs were both 0.2. Okay? So these are the corrections. And then the new values are the previous values minus plus the correction. The corrections are negative, so we get 0.04 for the first weight, and you see W2 is zero. This is interesting. Now, the weight can be zero, which means next time when we take the next sample, now it will be the new epoch. So we take the first one again, the first vector for training. So the second component of the vector will not count at all because it will be computed by W2, which is zero. That's also possible. So we do that. So this is a second epoch. So we take the first vector again, 0503, and label is 1. So what happens here? Of course, this is 0, the weight 2. But we get the sign of 1, which is still good. So we managed to classify the first vector well. Then for the second vector, the same. For the third vector, let's see, the same. Now, the fourth vector, what we do, we get the sign 1, so it's still to correct. Okay? And we do this correction, we get the new weights. Now, one is positive, another is negative. So, will that solve the problem? We shall see. The vector number 5 for training, it will be correctly classified. So, we still need to, we had one that was wrong, so we have to run another epoch. So repeat the whole process. The first one, we get minus 1, so we need the correction now, you see. So the classify the vector number 4 and 5, well, we made the weights of the function, some of them negative, which actually spoils the classification of the first three. So this is the long procedure of repeating the all this before we get. So you, of course, some of them will be classified well, some not. But unless we get all the vectors that are classified well, we have to repeat this. So we shall have many epochs here, so many, many, many epochs. And after these many epochs, you do this at home because the calculation is all the time the same. So you do this, and finally you get that all the five were correctly classified. So the final values, let's see. So in the last epoch, you will get the first one, the first weight 0.1, and the second minus 0.12. So these are the last weights that we have obtained. You see, all the five here are correctly classified. So this is the before the last epoch. So this is what we obtain. W1 is 0.1, W2 is minus 0.12. Now with these two, we correctly classify. Now this is the last epoch in which there is no change. You see, delta W1, delta W2 is 0 in all five cases. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You see? So in all five vectors for training, we obtained that there is no need to correct the weights. In such a way, we achieved that the procedure for training converged. That's called convergence. So we don't have to train any longer. And these weights, W1 is 0.1 and W2 is minus 0.12, they actually correctly classified all our training samples. Now, the third one is, the third example is to classify. So let's say that we have trained this perceptron. Now we have to classify this vector, 0.4, 0.6. So is it good or bad? It's very easy. We just compute the total input with the weights that we have obtained in training. So we have 0.4 times 0.1 plus 0.6 times minus 0.12. This will give minus 1, which means that our sample is considered normal by this perceptron. So usually the testing procedure is very easy. It's just to compute the output of the neural network or perceptron, in this case just one neuron. Also with complicated neural network is the same, but training procedure is more complicated. So in our case, we shall have to, this is our example, where we actually have to train this network. So that's the task number 4 in this exercise and the last one. So we just have one vector. So you have to compute the output and then to propagate the error backwards, and on this way you have to adjust the values of all these weights. So that's the backpropagation algorithm. Now, before we do that, we explain this is a shallow network because it has three layers. The input layer always has the same number of neurons as the number of components of the vector, number of measurements that we perform. Now, these neurons actually do not do anything. They just forward these values to the next layer, which means the output is always equal to the input. Okay, if input is 0,2 here, the output of this neuron will be also 0,2. And it will be distributed to the next layer, to all the neurons in the next layer, because we have dense network. This is a dense network because all the neurons from one layer are connected with all the neurons from the next layer. Now, this is called the hidden layer, the layer number 2, and this is called the output layer. Since we have only two classes, we need just one neuron in the last layer. Now, the function that fires the neurons is sigmoid in this case. The classical shallow network, it uses sigmoid for activation function in each neuron. We have not discussed how many neurons you have to put in the second layer. This is a digression. It has nothing to do with this example. So there are some rules. For this, we are not going into details, but 2 in this case should be okay. Now, remember the notation from the last class. You see here you have W, this is the weight, W21 of 2. So this big 2, that's the second layer. Okay? Now this small 2 here, that means the second layer of the destination neuron. The second neuron in the destination layer. And here this small 1, it's the first neuron in the originating layer. Okay? So this is this weight, it's W21 of 2 of the second layer. Okay? You can consider the first layer as having here the weight 1. And there is only one input, so it's 0,2 times 1, and it's just forwarded to the output. Now this Z is the output of each neuron. So Z101 means the output of the first neuron in the first layer. So the big one is the number of the layer, and the small one is the number of the neuron in this layer. So etc., etc. That's the notation. The output is Z1 of 3. 3 is the last layer. Big L is 3, which means we have 3 layers. And Z1 means the first layer in the first neuron in the third layer, but we only have 1. Now the initial weights are given here, they are random. Our task is to process one vector whose components are 0,2, 0,3, and 0,1. So we have to compute the output given this input, so this value, Z1 of 3, and then compute the error, and then backpropagate it to the input by changing these weights on the path backwards. So we use the formulas that we presented in the class. These are the backpropagation equations. So we first compute the output, and then we compute, since we have two classes, that's this case, we compute the error. Okay, so the error is, you see, the derivative of the sigmoid times the difference of the label of the training sample minus the difference between the label and the output that we have computed. So let's do this. So the forward step is computing the output. We start by formally setting the outputs of the first layer of the neural network. So let's get back to the neural network. So we have to compute these outputs first. They are obviously the same as the input. So Z1 of 1 will be 0,2, Z2 of 1 will be 0,3, and Z3 of 1 will be 0,1. Okay, so that should be clear. That's here. Okay? Now, they are all equal to the feature values of the training sample, so the components of the vector. We propagate these outputs to the next layer, and the expected output of the neural network is the label. The label is 0 in our case, so it is considered normal. 0,2, 0,3, 0,1 is considered, this vector is considered normal. Because by convention, 0 is normal, 1 is not normal. Okay, so the total input of the first neuron in the second layer, so we have to do that. The total input is computed the same way as with the perceptron. So it's sum wi xi, but not with sine function, but with sigmoid function. Okay? So the total input, we are going to denominate it u. So the total input of the first neuron in the second layer. So that's this one. So it will be W11 of 2 times Z1 of 1 plus W12 of 2 times Z2 of 1 plus W13 of 2 times Z3 of 1. So remember the notation. So W11, it's the first layer in the second, the first neuron in the second layer, the first layer in the first layer. Here, W12, the first layer, the first neuron in the second layer, the second neuron in the first layer, etc., etc. Here, 1,3. So this one is 1, and this one is 3. Okay? So these weights, the initial weights are given here. W11 of 2 is 0,1. W12 of 2 is 0,05, and W13 of 2 is 0,2. So these are the initial weights here, and we multiply these weights by these outputs, and what we get is actually this, 0.055. Now this is the argument to the sigmoid function. Okay? Now sigmoid function is sigma of this total input. It will be 1 divided by 1 plus exponent of minus 0.055, so we get 0.514. So this is the output of the first neuron in the second layer, so this one, Z1 of 2. Now Z2 of 2, the same thing, with different numbers, of course. We have this one, W21 of 2 times Z1 of 1 plus W22 of 2 times Z2 of 1 plus W23 of 2 times Z3 of 1, which gives 0.056, so approximately the same value. And when you compute the sigmoid function of this, you get more or less the same value here. So these two will be 0.51 for these two outputs. Now we propagate them to the next layer, which is the last layer. So the total input of the only neuron, the neuron 1 in the third layer, is Z1 of 2 times W11 of 3 plus Z2 of 2 times W12 of 3, which means this weight times this output plus this weight times this output, and that's the total input. And then the sigmoid function of this is 0.5. So what you get on the output is 0.5. And the label is 0, if you remember. So let's compute the error. The error is this, delta of L. So it's delta 1 of 3, because that's the only one. So if you remember the formula, so delta of L is sigma prime of, for two classes, sigma prime of U of L times the label minus the output that we have computed. Okay? So delta 1 of 3 is delta of L. It's sigma prime of the total input to the last neuron, okay, times the difference between the label and the output that we have computed, which was 0.5. So the label was 0, so this is a normal vector, and what we get by the neural network is 0.5. So this will be negative. And sigma prime of this U1 of 3 we have already computed when we computed the output. So it's 0.01. Now, sigma prime is this. This is what you had to compute for your homework. Okay? So this is the formula for sigma prime when we talked about sigmoid function. This is the sigmoid function, and the derivative is this. You see, sigma times 1 minus sigma. Okay, so when we substitute all that, we get minus 0 times 0.125. Now, the corrections by the formula, if you remember the formula. Yeah, you don't remember, but we presented the formula. So these are the corrections that we are going to compute. So eta is the constant that is given in the task. Delta I of L is this. You see? So we do this calculation. So we have computed the error. Now we compute the deltas of the input weights to this neuron, and then we can correct the values of these weights after we compute the delta. So we have delta W11 of 3, that's by how much you have to change this weight, and the other one is delta W12 of 3, this is how much you have to correct this weight. And for this we use this formula. So this delta I of L is actually what we compute here. It's delta 1 of 3 because that's the error in the last neuron. So we just substitute that. And of course, delta 1 of 3 is the same for the input weights of one neuron. When we substitute that, we get that both weights have to be corrected by 0.013. Now remember that these weights were W11 of 3 and W12 of 3. So W11 of 3 was negative, W12 of 3 was 0.07. So we have to correct these values. Now you see we subtract. So unlike the perceptron, in perceptron we actually add the delta. Now with the backpropagation procedure, we actually subtract the delta from the previous value. Okay? That's also a convention, but such is the formula. So we do that. Minus 0.063, that's the new value of the weight, W1103, and W1203 is 0.057. So we have computed the new values for these two weights. Now we do the same. We go backwards now. We have to compute the corrections for these three weights and these three weights. But for this, we first compute this error here. So we propagate these values backwards. So we compute delta 1 of 2 by this formula, delta 1 of 2. So the first neuron of the second layer. So we need the derivative of the sigmoid function for the total input of this neuron, the total input with the old values. So delta 1 of 3 times W11 of 3. So that's by the formula this. Okay? So you see how we get this? We use the previously computed error. So that's why it is called backward backpropagation. So deltas are errors. So errors obtained in the previous layer. Now errors obtained in the previous layer, since it was just one neuron, it's this delta 1 of 3. That was our output error. Now, when we substitute that, we get delta 1 of 2 to be this. And for delta 2 of 2, the second neuron here, we compute delta 2 of 2 to be this by using the same formula, this one. Okay, so that's the formula that we have used. Now, once we do that, then we compute the corresponding deltas. You see, delta for the first neuron, these three, and delta for the second neuron, these three. Okay, so these are these three, that's the first neuron, these three, the second neuron. So all these deltas are computed. So you see, it's a lot of manual calculation that you don't have to do in a wrong way, and then once you do this, then you just subtract from the previous values of these weights, W11, W12, W13, W21, W22, and W23. This is what we do here. And these are the new values of these weights, and that's all, because we don't have more weights. So these three, and these three, and these are one forever. So that's it. So we have actually processed the first vector, computed the output of the function of the neural network, computed the error, which depends on the input weights here, and then backpropagated that error by correcting these W's all the way back to the input layer. Which means that's a lot of manual labor in which you must not commit any error, otherwise the things diverge. And that's why we never do that manually, because you have to repeat that for each sample in the training data set that can be like billions of vectors that are labeled, and for each neuron. And you have seen today in the lab that we used like three input here, but here in this layer we use 32 neurons, 64 neurons, 128 neurons. Terrible business. So how would you do that manually? It's really difficult, so nobody does that. And besides, it's very easy to program this formula. It's not a big deal. So it's a couple of loops and no problem. The most complicating things here is the notation. You have to manage among all these indexes and these here numerators or counters of the layers, because we have used this convention of labeling, which is not confusing at all, but there are so many indexes, so you have to be very careful. Okay, that concludes today's exercise. If you have any questions regarding this, you can always use Piazza or send me an email or visit me in 436, which is my room, so we can talk about that. So next week we shall have the guest lecture, and it will be Håkon Gunnleifsen from Eidsiva. He will give a talk on Monday on intrusion detection in virtual networks. So you will see what virtual vectors networks are. You have maybe met this, but it will be a kind of repetition. And then you will see how we can do intrusion detection in such networks, and we can deploy intrusion detection systems easily throughout these networks. So that's on Monday. Sorry?
Will it be virtual online?
It will be presential. It will be physical in S411. Yeah. So, and then on Tuesday we do the next lecture then, because we don't have anything to exercise next week. So we do the next lecture, which will be testing intrusion detection system. At least we are going to start with that. If we manage to go through all that on Tuesday, then we are almost done. We only have one more topic and we are done with the course. Okay, so see you next Monday in S411 with the guest lecture. Please, if you can, be present there, because we have a guest lecturer that would not like to meet the empty room. So it would be very nice if you could be present physically. If not by any means, then please be online.
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure with the